Christian Pulisic is crushing it at Serie A, and those folks don't want us to say the truth, which is that he might be the best player in all of Serie A right now. We talk about it.
And we talk some Premier League. There's a lot of refereeing decisions that we argue about. Somebody gets upset. Maybe everybody gets upset, but we shall figure out who's going to win the league and what referee is going to help them do that. Uh-huh. Also, we run that back. Hudson River Derby and Madrid Derby. A lot of Derby talk in the last segment. So all this and more today on The Cooligans. The Super Bowl halftime show performer has been announced.
Just what everyone thought we were going to talk about when you clicked on this episode.
Yes, because everybody knows this is an NFL podcast. Right.
You know what? Just do the Super Bowl in Puerto Rico.
There should be a halftime show. And a Super Bowl halftime show podcast dedicated to just the Super Bowl halftime show performers throughout the years.
You probably could do it every week of the year too, because there's so many rumors, so many news, and also a lot of people in Toledo, Ohio, upset. Shout out to Andrew Scholes, by the way.
Bad Bunny, but he's doing great in Riyadh right now.
I found out his fee, by the way. I can't say it on the show, but
I mean, it's a lot. Oh. Everybody's getting a lot. So,
wait till you find out.
We'll talk about that some other time.
Whatever you think it is, it's more.
Bad Bunny is going to be performing at the Super Bowl next year in 2026. And this is big fans of Bad Bunny. And it's maybe I'm in this bubble. It's probably a fairly large bubble, but everyone I know knows Bad Bunny to a very high degree. Like, even if you don't speak Spanish, you know that he is one of the most popular people, like, on earth. One of the most popular musicians.
He's the biggest performing artist right now.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Swifties might get mad.
Yeah.
But, like, the numbers.
That's why I said right now. Like, if Taylor Swift was, like, on a big-ass tour, she'd probably be number one. If her album just dropped, she'd probably be number one. But right now. Based on the residency.
That's the new title of her tour. Big-ass tour.
Big-ass tour. Then who's going on it? Because no disrespect, Taylor Swift. As Miro said, she just got a long back. And I know he got in a lot of trouble with the Swifties for that. But he not wrong, though.
Alexis is just quoting another person.
I'm just saying, he might not have been wrong.
So, the main thing here is given the, Bad Bunny performing in Puerto Rico was a very intentional decision, because he didn't want to perform in the U.S. or in countries that were going to.
Turns out that wasn't the case at the beginning. He was going to do a tour just for Puerto Rico, and then he was going to add a couple of U.S. dates.
Sure.
And then when he saw everything that was happening, you know, all of his fans getting kicked out of the country by a cold pieces of ice. Should have said cold water, but whatever, ice. Once he saw that, he decided, you know what? I'm only going to do Puerto Rico and then Latin America and then Europe and I think Asia after
that. So we're just getting everybody prepped right now, because the tweets are going to be crazy.
What? No. What do you mean gonna?
I'm sure they're not paying attention? I'm sure. They're going to be to an unbelievable degree.
There's a lot of dudes in the driver's seat of their car with the front-facing camera. They're wearing Oakleys and hats backwards. And they are furious.
Brother, it is going to... I can already see the tweets now. Yeah. And it is... Oh my God, this country is going to hell.
Right.
I can't understand what he's saying. Why is this on the Super Bowl? There's going to... The racismo.
Yeah, but if you ask these motherfuckers, they just want a Charlie Kirk memorial for the entire halftime.
Bro.
A moment of silence for the entire halftime.
It is going to be... The racismo is going to be through the roof.
Don't nobody...
Everybody, get
don't
ready.
Don't nobody care about what Morgan Whalen thinks. Whatever, dude.
Build the Wallin.
You know anyway. What? You know what? Honestly, that might be his next album. if you want, and I suggest you do this, if you hate the idea of Bad Bunny having the halftime show, yo, put on your own halftime show.
Okay.
Yo, live stream one of your little, you know, joints. You know what I mean? Couple spoons against the knee.
Okay.
You know?
Those gotta slap, though.
I'm not saying it sucks. I'm just saying you do that,
yeah,
and we'll see who gets the more, who gets more ratings.
Okay.
The
yeah.
kids want to shake their hips, bro.
We got to do this. Somebody, maybe we'll do this on Patreon, but a few of our Patreon members were asking who are not super familiar with Bad Bunny. They were asking that you should do your top 10 favorite Bad Bunny songs. I could do it as well, too, yeah, but maybe we can come up with a joint
top five.
Top
at least. Grab yourself Bad top Bunny, five and then just.
Bad Bunny, best.
Let the algorithm take you where it goes.
For the alliteration, Bad Bunny, best 11.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, here we go.
I think that might work. So we'll do that on...
Or the Bad Bunny five-a-side.
Okay. Cinco-a-side. Yeah. So we'll figure that out. But yeah, I'm excited about the Super Bowl. And if you tell me that you are not excited about it, tells me all about you. It tells me all I need to know about you. That's all I'm saying. All right. Let's get started today. Welcome to the Coolians, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We out here crushing it per usual, you know, in a cheerful New York is blue mood. Mm. You know how it is.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Christian, I'm excited for today's show. We got a hot one. A lot of stuff to talk about.
All right, Alexis. I mean, it's quite clear Alexis hates his co-host.
I love my co-host. I hate platitudes. Okay. I also don't know if I use that word correctly.
But we have a lot to cover today that I'm excited about. We got to talk.
Wow, both of us are excited about a lot of things we have to cover.
Some Premier League drama. You know, MLS is we're getting very close to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk some Madrid derby as well. But let's start today with Christian Pulisic. Is there anyone hotter right now than Christian Pulisic? Is Christian Pulisic the best player in Serie A right now? And that is why it is our top topic.
Mm.
This is the top topic.
So, the stats speak for themselves. He is, he could even go back into last year as well, but he is looking at, and not only is he looking like AC Milan's best player, he is looking like Serie A's best player. He's playing with almost a bit of a like, am I too good for this league kind
Damn,
of a thing?
Bro. Can y'all find anyone that can stop me?
Because it's wild to go from you know he was obviously very good at Dortmund and he had his moments, but he was very young. And then Chelsea kind of up and down injuries.
Lockdown. Pulisic was a vibe. Mm. He was amazing.
Okay. Oh yeah. Lockdown. I thought you meant like yeah, meaning like COVID
during COVID lockdown. He was right, the best. Yeah, but we can't say that because. Then YouTube's gonna, you know what I mean? So yeah, during lockdown, you know.
I'm saying RFK is right about everything.
Okay, bleep all of that because we want this thing to be monetized.
So Christian Pulisic in the game against Napoli, he has a goal and an assist against the Serie A title holders. And yeah, this is a big game because Milan, AC Milan last season completely underachieved. It's kind of fell apart in the middle of the season towards the end.
There were no European competitions.
No European competitions. Just a sad last few weeks of hoping they could possibly get a European spot. And then playing against Napoli, who have Kevin De Bruyne, who have Scott McTominay, who obviously won the title last season.
They have Conte. I mean, they are unstoppable until they face Milan.
and for them to get this victory is very much a statement win. It just says, like, yes, they can compete for the title and be in that conversation, because last season was just like, what is this team? Why? And Pulisic still had the same numbers. They had Tijani Reinders before he left to Man City, and maybe there's a little bit more leadership or ownership of this team that Christian Pulisic. They're clearly relying on him a lot more in just these few games. That's why it's just not a crazy thing to say that he is the best player in Serie A right now.
Like, look at the stats. Top scorer in the league.
Yeah.
Christian Pulisic, most goal contributions in the
goals,
league.
With 4 goals already.
Yeah, most goal contributions with, I believe, 6 or 8. I believe it's 6. Christian Pulisic. So is he right now, at least in the running for best player in Serie A? Undeniably, yes. Yes, we're talking a very early, you know, results, right? This is very early in the season. Anything can happen in a long season. But if you look at Christian Pulisic's career, one of the things that stands out is just how many manager changes this guy has gone through. How many different managers he's had to try to impress, try to stay a part of the plan. So he's been successful with some, not with others. Gets to Milan, things seemingly calming and settling a little bit, right? He's getting into Champions League. And then they start going through their manager carousel, right? Fonseca didn't work out, so on and so forth. So now he has Maximiliano Allegri, right? Allegri, for the most part, is a Serie A stalwart. This guy knows how to win Serie A. Mm-hmm. If you're saying, like, people that know how to win Serie A, names may start coming up like Conte and whatnot. Allegri's on that list. Not only on that list, very high up on that list. Not my favorite style of soccer. Very boring, very pragmatic, very defensive, very, you know, counterattacking. But those are things that seemingly play really well in a Christian Pulisic's hand, especially when you're trusting him a little bit further high up the pitch than where we've normally seen him, right? So if you're trusting him there, if you're trusting him on the counter, you're seeing ways where he looks electric. The assist he had yesterday.
The assist was
great. It was one of the best runs I've seen him make in his career.
Right, and it very much reminded me of Gareth Bale's run in the Copa del Rey.
Huge.
Yeah, it's just a great moment because you don't really... Christian Pulisic's game is not it's not flashy. He's not really beating.
He has moments where he can, but he's not very like, I'm taking control of this match right now.
Yeah, and that's what we're just kind of starting to see. Even in with the assist was fantastic, but the goal as well.
Yeah,
was just him. First of all, he's playing on the left side, which that's where he plays for the U.S. men's national team as well. That's really where I think this is his best spot. This is where he needs to be because he can, him cutting inside. And again, because he's not a player that's necessarily going to take on people 1v1, but he can make. He's deceptively fast. And like in that goal, he's sort of a small guy and he's just like getting in through kind of unnoticed.
Funny enough, he does what Thierry Henry was saying Jokeres should do, which is, cut in front of the player, cut in front of the defender, sort of takes him out. Like the only way he can stop you is to foul you from that point on. Almost takes him out of play. He doesn't do that until the very last second, but he does it at the touchline.
Yeah.
In the most influential part, you can do it. So he sets up a perfect cross where it's just a tap in. And in that moment, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, as an American, I'm like, oh, finally.
Yeah.
Maybe it is not having to play 3 matches in a week. Maybe not having to play, you know, European football is good for him.
Maybe. I sort of suggested this when AC Milan didn't qualify for all this. But then the negative also is that he's not playing against top competition regularly. So come into international breaks, coming into the World Cup, he has not gotten to cut his teeth that year against the toughest opponent. So it might be a little bit shocked during international competition when he's like, yo, everybody's good. Why is everybody so good?
Yeah. I don't know. In international competition, I think teams don't get to play, or whatever nations, they don't get to play as teams as much. So
yeah,
sometimes maybe the level isn't as high as it might be at a club. But what do you think is more important? If you had to pick one, you have to pick one. Christian Pulisic playing against the highest level of competition week in, week out, or Christian Pulisic coming into the World Cup as healthy and not as run down as possible? If you had to pick one.
If I had to pick one, I guess I would pick health, of course.
So then as far as I would also.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, this kind of is leading. Well, I think there are negatives to not playing in Champions League for sure. It's kind of playing into the hand of the U.S. men's national team.
Maybe, but also I'm not going to deny a player that is a little battered, a little bruised, been through the mud, been through a lot. So then he gets to the World Cup and he's like, hey, you don't even want to know the shit I've seen. You know, I'm like, I kind of like that.
Why is he smoking a cigarette out there?
you've been playing in Vietnam in the 70s?
Hey, bro, Christian Pulisic, were you replaced by Jason Statham by any chance?
So since his debut in Serie A, which is 23-24, Pulisic has become the player who has taken part in the most goal contributions in the last 3 seasons of Serie A, which is 46 total. 27 goals, 19 assists, surpassing Lautaro Martinez with 45.
So he's better than Lautaro Martinez.
We're reading it. It's right there.
Well, Lautaro, if you got a suggestion, maybe show it on the pitch.
So, but it is easy because Milan are where they are and not playing. Even the last two seasons, I mean, they just kind of just underachieved and really haven't met the standards that these kind of numbers. Like, if you have a player like this on your team, you would imagine that the team is doing fairly well. But there's a little bit. Sometimes I watch AC Milan, I'm like, why are you surrounding Pulisic with all these bums, bro?
Yeah, man, step the level up. Spend some money.
Just a little bit. It's frustrating because now they can't spend money. They can't spend the money that they want. But maybe this is a sort of what they need for this time in the club's history to just kind of reset and fix things. And
I want to wait a little bit to see what happens towards we get to the middle part of the season. I think also Christian Pulisic, this is the second year in a row where he started very hot. He wasn't as consistent towards the end of last season. Yeah. I want to see him become a little bit more consistent in the second half of the season. Maybe the less workload, less matches helps that, less calendar congestion. But for me, I think what's important is he's 27 years old now. You're at the peak of your career. I believe he is 27 years old. Mm-hmm. You're at the peak of your career, so to speak. Now's the time to really show the world you are that guy. You know what I mean? I don't think that just happens in the World Cup. I think it's important to do it in the World Cup. I think it's really important to do it in the club game as well. Show the world you are that guy. Show the world you can be consistent. Because, yes, right now you have more goal contributions than Lautaro Martinez, and I think we should applaud that. But at the same time, I've seen Lautaro Martinez in a Champions League final. I've seen Lautaro Martinez lift a World Cup trophy. I've seen Lautaro Martinez lift a Copa America trophy. I've seen Lautaro Martinez play at the highest levels across the board. I've not seen Christian Pulisic do those things.
Sure.
So prove it to me.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put that all on Pulisic because, also Lautaro Martinez gets to play some pretty good players.
Yeah. I'm just saying, yeah, you're better than him in goal contributions. Show me you're also as good at him at some other things.
Okay, that's fair. I think the it's hard to compare even from a club perspective because the teams are in such different places.
Actually not, they're in the same building. literally the same,
but you know where they are in their particular journeys. Milan is just like always top, essentially the last few years quarterfinalists.
They are getting a little trouble money wise so for I mean, who how they got
it?
There
who is it nowadays, but the last
thing, all this money,
the last Pulisic thing I wanted to talk about is just the drama that we had of him skipping Gold Cup and the Landon Donovan comment and everything, his father getting involved and everything. This is obviously the way to handle all of this. Just play very well, have a good season, have a lot of focus because the people, the federation effectively is relying on you quite a bit from a for the performances on the pitch and marketing perspective. Like, this World Cup is going to be a very big deal. And there's a lot of expectations, and not just expectations of like him just simply playing well, but being kind of an ambassador for the national team and really raising the interest and stock of, people leading into watching the World Cup and all this other stuff. So this quiets a lot of people. I even saw a week or two ago with Tim Howard and Landon Donovan. Really, just like the temperature cools down very quickly when he's just it's undeniable how good he is playing, mm-hmm. And that is what silences all the other voices. So that's I think it's interesting because if he obviously if he doesn't skip Gold Cup and doesn't almost everything. Pulisic does everything right, except this kind of some of the stuff off the pitch, right? Like, he didn't, obviously, I would have loved if he was at the Gold Cup, but he also doesn't need to go on a podcast and sort of defend himself and make, like, by addressing it, it sort of just makes it worth, like, this is how you address it.
Play
really well for your team.
This
That's
is how it.
It
would have been pre-social media, right?
Right.
If somebody would have criticized you, you score a couple goals in the next match and go, where's the goal? All of a sudden, everyone's quiet. That's crazy.
You know
why y'all ain't yipping as much as y'all used to yip.
Right. You do great things, you know. Yeah, and then everybody forgets your like indiscretions or whatever. So, but yeah, this is a I'm happy to see him play well, and more than anything, not just from a selfish USMNT fan perspective. I think also for AC Milan and AC Milan fans, like this is like they're I believe in second place right now.
AC Milan's in first.
Oh, in first. Okay, yeah. So this is they sort of. I think when we started the podcast, Juventus was on their run of winning like seven or something in a row, whatever. So they were just like this unbelievable, just unstoppable force. They were the
Bayern Munich of Serie A.
And the last couple of years, it's just been different winners. I mean, for almost any league in the world, it's like kind of nice. It's Serie A and MLS that kind of had different winners every year. so it's kind of nice to see. But you know, keep it going. That's all we want. All right. Let's take a quick break. We got to talk Premier League, and we'll do that after this with some Around the League.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. In fact, while you're here, why don't you come with us around the league in the Premier League? And let's start by talking about Arsenal, baby.
Wow.
With a big comeback against Newcastle at St. James Park, which doesn't happen often.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because I'm an Arsenal fan. And I always dread when the team goes away to Newcastle. Huge, huge comeback. A lot of controversy in this match as well.
Plenty.
Is this it? They're catching up. 2 points against Liverpool. 2 points away from Liverpool on the table.
Uh-huh.
Real showing real intent to want to win the league as far as I'm concerned. How you feeling about that?
Well, last week we were talking about how Arteta was scared with the lineup decisions, not starting Eze, and then I forgot who else. I think Trossard started on the left and stuff like that. And this time around, I thought a much better lineup, but then also you could feel the intent and. Arsenal,
especially with the subs.
With the subs,
he threw everything at him. The kitchen sink.
Arsenal this season, I mean, you know, they clearly want to win a title. And that was evident to me where these matches are it's for Arsenal, it is effectively 38 Champions League finals, right? You are every game.
Well, especially when you're chasing Liverpool.
Exactly. So the margin for error is so small. And this is why, and you know, we get the controversies around refereeing decisions are common in every single game. You're never going to have a perfectly refereed game, but in games with Arsenal, with Liverpool specifically, because it really feels like it's a 2-horse race and these are the best, teams that have an opportunity to win. Some people might throw City in there as well, but the refereeing decisions feel more impactful because they feel like they're going to affect us, you know, 8 months later. You know what I mean? So,
like, 2 points dropped today could somehow decide the title.
So, and it feels so, it's so early in the season, but this is, as I'm watching the game, we can get into a whole pro-rel sort of conversation that we should have maybe in MLS or something like that. But there's something to the anxiousness of watching that I'm like, bro, 8 months from now, that thing I'm going to be thinking about this moment right now,
right.
Which in MLS, I'm not necessarily thinking that.
When was the last time there was this much tension around the sixth match of the season for any MLS team?
Exactly. And
none.
There's pros and cons for whatever. I'm not here to have that conversation. I'm just saying.
Pro and what? Oh, Khan. I thought you said Rob. So, no, I get what you're saying, but and look, I'm not one of these fans that thinks, oh, the season's on the line, right? It was so annoying when they were like, oh, Liverpool's opened up a 5-point lead. You know, that's it. They Arsenal out of the title race. It's the sixth week of the season.
Bro, yeah.
You're not out of any title race whatsoever. Things change. A major injury could help or hurt or adjust what this league looks like. We saw everyone said City last year, and we saw them go through a horrific run. No one bet that they would have had as bad a season as they had, or certainly had the comeback that they had and got themselves back into European position. it's really hard to decide what happens in the future. And I get a little exhausted of the English media being like, what happened this week is the future. That's it. How everything's going to play out from now on. So I'm not going to take this for, you know, I'm not going to get as high as they possibly are right now, or especially Arsenal fans. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to get as low as most people were last week. But the term intent is super important. You can't go into these games. And again, Newcastle is a bogey team for Arsenal. I can't remember how long it's been. Something like three seasons, basically, that we haven't won at St. James Park. It's a bit of a tough place for Arsenal to go to historically. For Arsenal to go there and say, you know what? We're not even going to try to equalize. And I watched the Sky Sports stream. How? I'm not going to tell you. It was allegedly.
None of your business.
Right? I'm just going to say, happened to pop up on my screen. So that's the one I watched. And I watched it because I wanted to hear how they spoke about the match, because there was so much Britishisms happening in the media the week leading up to it. And Gary Neville specifically said, and this is the first time I think I've agreed with him. He said, as soon as Mourinho scores, he said, okay, a championship team doesn't just take this point. They try to win this game. And I completely agreed. And what we saw from Mikel Arteta from that moment on was he made adjustments to win this game away on the road at a place he never wins. That tells you everything you need to know about where Mikel Arteta, the pressure that's put on him this season, and where the pressure he's putting on himself this season, which is to win a title. He made adjustments to win this game. And that's also the secret and the beautiful part of the amount of depth that we have. And I know I'm speaking to an Everton fan and you're like, depth? What is that? We don't have it. Don't want to hear about it.
It's very shallow water over here.
It's not important for you. But for Arsenal to be able to bring on Martinelli, which seems rejuvenated and seems hungry to want to score, for them to be able to bring on Mikel Merino, who in tough moments knows how to score, right? He was a backup striker. For them to be, and we still don't have Martin Odegaard at his best. We don't have Martin Odegaard fully matched.
It was nice to see him back. Yeah.
And he beautiful through ball. All these things, I'm like, wow, he's managing 90 minutes the way like a baseball manager would manage nine innings. You know, I think back to like what Mariano Rivera. It's like the Yankees used to be like, hey, man, if we could get a lead in the sixth, it's over for you. You don't have three more innings. Because here comes our bullpen. Mm-hmm. And here comes our, you know, our closer in the last inning or two innings. You're just not going to get a hit off of any of these guys because we have the backups that could shut you down. And for Arsenal, it's the same thing. Oh, we're down a goal in the 60th. Watch what happens. We're going to bring on fresh legs, which used to be our starters.
You're speaking like there's a lot of confidence. I don't know how much. I mean, the intent was there. I don't know if the confidence
disagree. I completely disagree with you.
I don't know.
I think that's why you bring in an Odegaard. That's why you bring in these guys, because these are starters. These are the ability to come in at a different level than anything Newcastle could handle.
They were Arsenal were better the entire game. And I thought even,
Newcastle tried to shut it down at the end.
But if Trossard, first, the penalty that probably should have been a penalty for Gyökeres, and then if Trossard doesn't hit the post there, the game changes.
I'm so frustrated.
So much,
shot.
Right? But
the, I mean, the first half was a good sign of what Arsenal has to figure out a way out of. And I think everyone is looking at Gyökeres as be the guy that kind of gets us out of that, which is you're doing everything right until you get front of goal. Right, you have all the shots, you have all the XG, you have all the ball, you have all the momentum, you have all the goal danger, but you can't seemingly get it. And Nick Pope was standing on his head.
Yeah, Nick Pope had some great saves, but the run, I forgot who sent him the ball, but where he had what's his name? What's the center back's name?
Timber?
No, the center back on Mosqueda? Newcastle.
Mosqueda.
The tall, really tall guy. I forgot his name.
Hunt? Burn?
Burn. Dan Burn. Burn. Who I saw. I remember I saw him in person. Also very, very tall.
Very imposing.
At a charity event. But he had him, they send like a long ball. Gyökeres is like kind of 1v1 with Nick
Pope.
This
is where Burn slides in.
And Gyökeres tries to cut it back to his left. And it's like, bro, just shoot right there. What you don't even need to do all that.
And what you're talking about is legitimately a half a second where I can guarantee you most people watching it, Arsenal, other than Newcastle fans, were going, shoot! What are you doing?
there's moments where he doesn't help himself.
But it's that half second that he has to adjust to in this league, because everyone says the Premier League is super fast.
Yeah.
If you're Gyökeres, you're learning. You don't get you're not playing Estoril.
Exactly. In Portugal, that defender is sliding into the stands because he thinks you're about to shoot.
And after the match, he's applying to be a bus driver. No disrespect to the Portuguese. No, but honestly, you don't get that moment for us with most, the, with most, against right. most
so
clubs.
Then the other, a couple, the controversial calls in this game, or non-calls.
The Jokeris penalty. What Jokeris are we talking penalty. About?
I mean, it's a, so the frustrating thing here is that they're, during the, on the broadcast, not the Sky Sports, on the NBC and, you know, Peacock broadcast, you can hear John Champion as the, as VAR is looking at the call. He says specifically, he's like,
this is crazy, by the way.
It's kind of weird because he's
this spelled very WWE.
the announcers can hear the VAR communication right. with the referee.
Gary Neville brought this up as well, but John Champion took it to another level.
John Champion is you can in his response, because we the audience do not hear it, but he is basically saying, he's like, hey, the VAR is very kind of intently
he's trying to convince him.
I don't think he used the word convince, but he's just trying to guide. He said the word guide. He said the VAR is trying to guide the referee on the decision. Basically, really just trying to like, hey, this is not a penalty. You say clear and obvious error, but John Champion is repeating what he's hearing and saying, like, he's really trying to tell him, like, hey, this is not a penalty. So this is the only thing that's odd here is that VAR feels like this doesn't need, we don't need another referee. The VAR is like, hey, what VAR should do is say, hey, I think you made an error here. I think this was no penalty. Why don't you go take a look at it? Nah, you'll go take a look at it. Yo, you see that? You see that? Nah, that's not a penalty, right?
Nah, bro, you bugging. No, that's crazy, look at it again, bro.
Look at I know you might disagree, but nah.
Why don't you tell me what you saw? Because this is crazy. I know you saw with your own eyes, but I'm at 4K right now.
So the idea that a VAR would try to influence the decision, that's the main thing. The VAR is not there to influence the referee. The VAR is there to help the referee with like, hey, I think you missed this.
You would think so, right?
Go take a look. Nah. Hey, go take a look. It just feels like, what is the motive here? Like, if it's clear enough, I mean, I thought it was a penalty.
I think it was very clearly a penalty. When you see the replay and you see it in slow motion, which look, I'm pro VAR. I'm against the way VAR is being used. And this is a prime example.
Right.
Okay. Because to me, this is more human error. How will we get more human error if you get every angle? Yeah. It's ridiculous. But okay, the IFAB rule, law 12 for fouls and misconduct is a direct free kick is awarded if a player commits an offense against an opponent in a manner considered by the referee to be careless, reckless, or using excessive force. Why that's important is because also the touch on the ball, right? Pope's touch on the ball meant it was a question of whether he was attempting to play the ball fairly. I don't think he was, right? You could say like, oh, he hit the ball, even if he takes out the player. In the penalty box, it's important to denote whether he was trying to play the ball fairly or trying to take out the player. If Jokeris has to kick the ball into the path of the goalkeeper's foot, that very clearly tells you he wasn't trying to play the ball. He was trying to stop the player. Right. And that is a penalty. That is a direct penalty in the box. I do not understand why VAR is allowed to try to re-referee that moment or try to explain or guide, whatever you want to say, Sherpa the referee to his point or her point, or though it was Darren England, so it's his point. But pick which one. I'm okay with both if we all say this is how it's going to go. If the VAR is going to say, hey, man, I have better angles of it, it's this. And then the referee has to go back out and go, hey, actually, it's not a penalty.
Right.
I'm fine. Second thing, why can't we hear it? Why aren't we privy to what's being said?
We hear it later, maybe. If it's
we should be able to hear it.
Just in the stadium.
You want to make more money off TV? Put VAR audio on the broadcast.
I'm mad about it. Yeah, I am.
Let us hear it. Because now, full disclosure, everything's out in the open. We know exactly what was said or wasn't
said.
Show
us the transcript.
Yo, release the tapes, bruh. So, release the list of VAR.
And it felt... maybe this is my suggestion. I think the VAR can be like, I think there was an error. Here, take a look. And then shut off their mics. Shut off their mics. Don't let them talk to each other. Just let the referee take a look. How much, you know, guidance do they really need? The referee gets a better look. Let them decide. Not so we don't have this instance where the VAR is trying to influence the referee in any way, because it doesn't. I can't imagine it needs more than one explanation. Like,
and if the referee has to communicate back, like, yo, show me that other angle again, you don't need to respond verbally to do
right,
that.
Right.
So, okay, like, yeah. I don't mind that. I just say, can we pick one?
Sure, sure.
Right? If you're allowed to try to convince the referee on the pitch, something, the official, go for it.
Sure.
And now we know.
Then the other one,
handball. Gabby Handball.
Magazine. I saw it as it hit Gabrielle and then hit his hand.
You cannot... It's not a handball if you kick it to your own hand.
Exactly. And that's so exactly I understand. But the play happens so fast that it does look like Elanga just hits it off his arm. But I believe it hit foot, then his hand. And that's by the rule, not a handball. Then the other Gabriel Magalhães, the shove to the face, neck.
I thought you were talking about the Voltamade where he fell.
Yeah,
Gabriel fell.
That
was like
terrible defending.
He pushed me. What are you talking about?
No, he should have just.
Also, Voltamade is what, up. 7'19". Like it's just ridiculous. So, how is that allowed?
It is what it is, right?
But he's got such no fits. Where you get clothes that big?
Voltamade after the game, he was saying that he said I'm not the type of player that's gonna fall down for something like that, but. He might have to like kind of convince the referees or show the referees that. And Magalhães was trying to like shake his hand afterwards, and Voltamada had wanted nothing to do with it.
I don't know if on the Peacock stream they showed it, but there was a slow mo of Gabriel saying to him, "Just shake my hand."
Yeah, yeah.
Just shake
it. Was that too.
And it's the mind games that I think Gabby's really good at. You know,
He clocked him a little bit. It wasn't anything crazy.
So I think this is all part of his game. Yeah, I think this is also Haaland bounced the ball off the back of his head. The back and forth that goes along in that game, he's an old school center back, and old school center forwards like a Voltamade and Haaland who play along the shoulder are going to get yipped at and touched and poked and all that.
Welcome to the Premier League.
Welcome to Premier League, but hey, I'm not really sure what league you came from, Voltamade, but this ain't that one.
He came from Bundesliga.
Yeah, I know. I'm only joking around. ain't the Super League or whatever you was into.
So I don't know if you guys know Dale Johnson, but he's like the rules expert for Premier League.
Okay,
so
he just
came out with his
breaking
stuff
news.
So the Nick Pope one, in his opinion, is very complicated because if he's deemed to be playing the ball in a fair way, it's not a penalty. But if he's deemed to be playing the whip ball in a violent way, then it should still be a spot kick, even if he gets the ball. That's why he's saying it's such a controversial call and why it took so long for them to make the decision. In his opinion, Nick Pope should be deemed to be playing the ball in a fair way, and it should not be a penalty. So he's saying that they were right to not call it a penalty. And then
those are the thoughts of
The other one, the Gabriel one, he said, yes, there was a deflection on his foot before he hits his arm. But if this is not an example of a player committing a handball offense with a raised arm via deflection, what would be? Because his arm is completely away from his body. So he says this is not a controversial call because of how referees deem deflections now and how that's interpreted. Yeah. But it should be a penalty.
Interesting. I don't agree with that. And then
was he wearing a Tottenham shirt when he did this? This is ridiculous.
I will bring up the first or second game of the season. James Tarkowski got that handball call from a deflection, and his arms were behind his back. But because he
chicken wing.
He did not chicken wing. He moved his body towards the ball.
We watched this replay. He chicken wing.
So
I know you don't believe he chicken wing, but I believe he chicken wing.
When it's not about believing or not believing. He did not.
He moved. His elbow moved
chicken
further.
Chicken winging is moving your arm.
No, no, no.
His body.
I love that people are listening to this. His elbow moved further away from his body.
No, incorrect. Incorrect. He 100%. Moved his entire elbow to the ball. That's the point I'm making.
He's chicken winging.
Anyway, whatever. So I would say because of the proximity, that's really is the difference here. He's so close to the ball. He's so close to the deflection.
I get the point, though, that if you have your arm in the air, and I refuse to believe that that's not a natural position for sliding. That's what you do when you slide. No one slides with their arms. Watch any baseball game. You've seen a slide. No one slides with their arms next to them.
It was very high. You don't slide.
It was like.
You don't slide like
First
that.
First of all, you do. Second of all, what have you guys never slid before?
Oh, man, it's sliding the way Elon Musk tells people he loves them.
Please don't put Roman salute on Gabriel Magalhães, by the way. Also, his elbow was bent, by the way. Let me just make that clear. That you do slide with your arms not at your side at the very least, but you put yourself in a very precarious position in the box when you slide with your arm up. So I give some credence to that. But because he did deflect the ball to his own arm, that is not a handball.
Yeah, I agree. That's my interpretation. But yeah, well. And that's what the referee thought, and that's what VAR thought.
Gab,
yeah,
don't musk the next time you slide, bro.
So, yeah, the proximity is in you know, I think a big factor there. All right. So speaking of the implications of this match, they caught up to Liverpool, Crystal Palace, and a former Arsenal player who's still wearing the jersey under his Crystal Palace jersey. Eddie Nketiah scores a late winner, and he out Liverpooled Liverpool.
Yeah, man. He said, "You saw what you all done to the whole league. I'm gonna do this to you."
It was also on TikTok. I'm scrolling, and Eddie Nketiah's mom pops up.
Is she jumping around the living room? Right?
No, I didn't see that one. I saw the one where she's with him and she gives him a big kiss, and the caption is just like, you know, late winner, like. Mom wrote that. It's just weird that mom is such a like great TikToker.
Hell yeah, dude.
But it's just like the mom, late winner against Liverpool. But I'm reading the caption. It's like fairly long, and I'm like, you know, late winner against Liverpool, which helps Arsenal. You know what I mean? I was expecting that as well. But she was just like so proud of her son for scoring that goal and just having that moment. But yeah, this was a I heard that this the goal happened in what, the 97th?
It was 98th? Like 90 plus 5 or something like that.
But apparently Liverpool were upset because there were only 6 minutes of stoppage time, and this goal had
90 plus 7.
Yeah, and the goal happened after the allotted stoppage
Liverpool's
time.
Like, that's not. It's only allowed. We're only the only ones allowed to do that.
It's slot time.
Yeah, what you talking about?
Not Glasner time. No, that don't even sound right.
No, it's not Ollie time. Slot time.
So, but you know, more than anything, it's just like for the neutral. Hey. I love that the title race is you know, not getting out of hand.
What was it, an 18 game win, like no loss streak? What's the what? How do you say that?
Unbeaten. Crystal Palace extend their unbeaten streak to 18.
That I was not sure. I was talking about Liverpool.
Also, no, Crystal Palace are also no joke. They've been great this year. They're in third, fourth. They're in third place. In the Premier League. This is crazy. After selling Eze, and they're doing fantastic.
Liverpool had an 11-game unbeaten streak.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Which is, makes sense.
Super impressive. Yeah, no.
They hadn't lost this year so far, so.
Bro, Crystal Palace is on a like, they're killing it this year.
Sure.
And also, Mateta, bro. This guy looks
it's fantastic.
Like one of the best strikers in the league, where 2 years ago he was like a punchline.
Bro, he got his ear nearly taken off. And
also, he's like, get these guys off me. Get Elise off me. Get Eze off me. Watch me cook if I'm solo.
It's pretty remarkable how well they're playing.
He's Timberlaking. He said, let's get rid of these four bums. I don't know how many people were on NSYNC.
Pretty much the entire world.
I don't remember.
All right. Chelsea also, they lose. Who do they lose to? Why am I forgetting?
Is it Brighton?
No.
Who did Chelsea lose to?
It was Brighton.
Brighton. That was
right.
There it is. Okay.
That was right.
But the red
3-1,
card.
3-1, yeah.
The red card to Chalobah, I think, is the big change here. But the big impact there. And then Cole Palmer still, he's going to be out until after the international break. Mm-hmm. Maresca, I think it's a groin issue from that or hamstring. I don't remember.
I believe it was knee hamstring area.
I don't know. But this is, it's looking like they're going to be in a bit of a, they might be in a bit of a run. I mean, the game against Manchester United, they did win, but the red card to Sanchez, Sanchez.
Yeah.
It's just, it's sort of a little bit.
They did not
like,
win. They lost to United.
They lost to United. Yeah. Apologies. But they're looking like without Palmer, these like just two red cards or whatever, they look like they're going to hit a bit of a stretch where like, I don't know how, if they're going to like sort of recover.
It's crazy for a team that needed a wedding tent for the rest of their players to train. That doesn't seem deep enough right now.
Sure.
That seems odd.
Because, I mean, and they still have the weird issue with Raheem Sterling and who's the other player that they couldn't sell him and they won't let them train They're just like, you're not in the plan. They have to pay. Who is the other player? It's Raheem Sterling and...
I can't remember.
I think it's a center back. I don't remember who it is. Apologies. I can't remember. But it's just like, we can't sell you. There's no place for you.
No team wants you.
Yeah. I know what teams did want. I think
yeah, like, they couldn't agree to a fee. Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, well, now you have to just train on your own and you're not welcome with the group. Which
Axel DeSasi is the other one.
Okay.
Yeah. Your key card doesn't work here. might want to join Equinox.
So I wonder if Chelsea can kind of get back to that form that we saw them at the Club World Cup. They were my pick to win the Premier League, but
and I thought you were crazy.
And I don't think that is going to be the case anymore.
Again, early in the season, bro, it's six rounds in. It's a lot of rounds.
Okay, yes, I love the round, all the rounds. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And then Manchester United, they lose to Brentford, and look, it's becoming a broken record. Talking about this all the time, but this is so every time Manchester United lose. I'm on social media and I'm like, there's something incredibly entertaining with watching Flex, watching Good Vibes John, watching Maddie FC, watching Mark Goldbridge. I'm like, hey, let me shower me with your sadness.
Right. Show me your pain so I can enjoy myself.
And I appreciate, a lot of these people are our friends. And we have this fun banter back and forth. But the one I thought that was the take this weekend that I thought was pretty hilarious was from Mark Goldbridge, where he was specifically saying that Ruben Amorim is I'm not leaving unless you fire me, because apparently the
contract,
they're supposed to pay him a $12 million if they sack him early or something like that. And he's like, hey, this is how I play. This is what I do. Right. This is the system. And if you want to get rid of me, I ain't leaving. You're going to have to fire me. And
he's like, bro, like, you're going to have to pay me to walk away from this gig. So watch me keep trying and give me as much time and space as y'all got, because I don't think you got the money.
So that's kind of the theory he's throwing out there. It's not necessarily sabotage, but he's basically like, Goldberg is basically saying, like, he knows how difficult the ordeal that fixing Manchester United is. So he's like, hey, I'm just going to do what I do. And if it works out, fine. If it doesn't work out, I get $12 million. So,
God, what a wonderful position to be in. And I think the rumors have started. Sir Jim Ratcliffe has allegedly, maybe made contact with Gareth Southgate.
Yes, there's a short list of possible managers. Yes.
I think everyone can see very clearly that Gareth Southgate would probably be the perfect guy for this job, because he can settle the storm around it.
Yeah.
He did it with the English national team. He got them to stop being so tribal. He got them to kind of, it's insane that we're saying this, got them to play together and not hate each other, and not the Liverpool guys sit over here, the Arsenal guys sit over there, the United guys sit over here. He got them to play as one. He can probably come into Manchester United and be like, okay, everyone stay away from the players. The players need to focus on what's happening on the pitch. And then on the side, Gareth Southgate can start to work, kind of like Mikel Arteta did, to fix the structure from within.
Right.
I think that's a smart move. But you just paid $10 million or £10 million to get this guy out of his contract for Porto. You promised him $12 million if you fire him. You almost don't have the deck. You don't have the cards. You ain't got the facilities to sack this guy.
Yeah.
You almost have to hope it works out.
Yeah, they're in a really, really bad...
How many more people can Sir Jim Ratcliffe fire or make redundant?
If they were like mediocre, that it would even be like, hey, we have to back the manager. There's some positives here.
They're 14th?
I forgot what... I saw some stat. Ralph Ragnick.
They are in 14th.
Ralph Rangnick has more points.
Home wins. No, more home wins.
I mean, this is ridiculous. It gets more and more comical the more they have bad results. I mean, and arguably they only win against Chelsea because of that early red card. So the against Brentford, the first goal, Thiago, forgot his, I think his name is Igor Thiago. The ball that the run that he makes, I mean, the control, he heads the ball in front of him and then takes an unbelievable, just perfect strike to score the goal. But it's like, these the Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson. I'm like, I can't believe I'm saying his name. Jordan Henderson sends a perfect through ball. But then I think it's Harry Maguire that's trying to play him offside.
Right.
And it's like, so in moments like
the player to do that, bro.
But in moments like that, when you see that there is a turnover, and it was some argue might have been a foul, but Cunha loses the ball.
Right.
And in that moment,
the shot of Cunha kind of getting up, no.
But in that moment, Jordan Henderson gets the ball, sees his striker making the run.
Yeah.
And it's just in those moments. I don't know if it's a athleticism thing. I don't think it's necessarily that. Or I don't know if it's a system thing. Like, what do they do when they turn over the ball? Like,
counter-pressing is clearly not there.
Oh, not even the counter-pressing. You're like, how do they react in those moments? Right. And Maguire again, great run. Great play.
Harry Maguire's doing the best he can because ain't nobody else tracking back, dog.
And there's nobody there. That's the main thing. It's like you see the low is like, way up ahead. And it's like, he's not that great going forward. Yeah. And he's also not defending.
Yeah.
So it's like, bro, maybe there's somebody else that can do this. Maybe there's a different system or whatever. But it has to fall, again, back on the manager. And then also the goalkeeper. Bayern Deer made some incredible saves. Yeah. But the last goal was like,
it's crazy.
I didn't even understand how that ball gets through
him. It does feel like a bit of an upgrade over the way Onana was playing. I don't think Onana is as bad as he was playing at Manchester United because there's so many other problems. But why I would give Ruben Amorim more grace if it wasn't for, hey, you had your transfer market.
Yeah, yeah.
You had your transfer window. I should say not market. You had your transfer window, and this is what you brought in. So to some degree, like, yo, this is who you got now.
Sure.
You got to win and lose by the. You got to win, with that by the sword. This is your sword, dog.
Did you see the Mbeumo call? The foul? That's a penalty.
Yeah, of course.
But that was not given as a red. That was, who was it, Collins?
Right, they VAR'd it and decided it wasn't a red.
Yeah, but that one, that's kind of crazy. And this is another, we got to get a ref on here to maybe get some clarity on this. But if a ball is crossed to you, and you're in the box and you are kind of pulled at your shoulder a little bit to dissuade you and make it a little more difficult
knock
to
get you off your shot.
Yeah. And you would be 1v1 with the keeper. You would have a clear shot on goal if nobody touched you. It feels dogs though. I don't he got a yellow.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little bit of the double jeopardy thing, but the rule is you don't give the red if there was a clear attempt to play the ball.
Right.
There was no clear attempt to play the ball. He just pulls at Mbeumo.
Maybe the foul isn't.
The foul was
violent enough.
It wasn't violent at all. And it felt fairly soft, but I could see a red being here. The reasoning they gave was Mbeumo wasn't in control of the ball. He wasn't in control of the ball because he had not received it yet.
Had he not been fouled, he would have been in control of the ball.
So
so you guys know, Dale Johnson said it should have been a red card.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I thought we stopped listening to this guy. he just doesn't like Arsenal.
So, this seems like a poor decision from the referees. I don't know how you get to the point where you don't think that this is a red card, especially when you look at the Chalobah one, which was out. I think because it was outside the box, that's why it was a red and dog show. But it was kind of similar in its scope of like, about to get the ball and about to control it and got fouled as you were getting there. The only difference here was that one was outside the box and one was inside the box. Seemed very strange that it was only a yellow. So I feel bad for Manchester United not getting that, not being able to play up a man, but they get a penalty and...
Bruno.
The guy who never misses penalties is all of a sudden he's missed.
Although his face always looks like he just missed the penalty. I don't know why.
Whatever that means.
Why is that his face?
Anyway, all right. Let's take another break and we have some MLS and a couple other topics.
We're going to run that back.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's get into some Hudson River Derby. I think that was probably the biggest match of the weekend.
For us. And now you got to listen to us talk about it.
No, in Major League Soccer. And a 3-2 win at Sports Illustrated Stadium for New York City FC. And great game. This is
what's
one
that
of,
the sixth owner of Sports Illustrated now.
This was a great game. One of the I think more entertaining Hudson River derbies, where both teams really had it was a, like a good back and forth. And, yeah. and a lot
this
of,
could have gone any way. Heading
yeah,
into the
a lot of
the
games tend to be fairly, you know, not a lot, but like somewhat lopsided or low scoring. Mm-hmm. This one was great, but early. Very early goal in the second minute from Nico Fernandez Mercado. Yeah. And got things off started, you know, very intensely. But the, you know, outside of the game itself, I thought, first of all, I just want to give a shout out to Andres Perea, who I think is stepping up in such a huge level this season. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a player kind of bounced around to a couple different MLS clubs. He was in Orlando, in Philadelphia, and had a place, you know, as a good kind of holding mid, defensive mid role in every club he's been at. He got to NYCFC, couldn't really bump out.
Wasn't breaking into the starting lineup much.
You know, because it was, you know, Keaton Parks had that spot. You know, you're not bumping out Maxi. And now Nico Fernandez coming in and, you know, that's his spot, right?
Yeah.
So... But I thought he was the best player at this derby.
Interesting.
Not only just the you know the goal, which is the looping header, which is right. like somewhat luck.
If you meant to do that, then yes, you get an applause.
He meant
me,
to
bro.
Do the salsa afterwards. Yeah. I know
what's
that
salsa?
Yeah, he has like a very Colombian salsa. Is like a little has a little bit more.
It's a little
shoulders.
It's more erratic.
A little bit. You got a. There's a lot going on. And
it gave me PTSD of watching Talis Magno dance.
But no, but good PTSD. I like both
really?
Dances.
Okay.
Yeah,
both.
I love
I'm like
no. Talis Magno has a lot more. It's a lot smoother.
No,
like,
smoother. No, both of them need a mirror. Do it in front of a mirror and then come back and show me what you did.
I thought Perez like it has a little. It's a little bit more jittery. But
that's what I mean. It's like erratic.
Yeah, but I've so one of
imagine a bug crawling on your back. That's how he was dancing.
You remember my friend Johans.
Of course.
So his wife's cousin, I believe cousin, is a professional salsa dancer. They're Colombian from Cali. And I've seen her and her dance partner in these competitions and stuff. And it's that. It's much more jittery, a little bit erratic, but it's like it's clearly composed and they know what they're doing. But it's just
they mean to do that.
It's salsa with power.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, but no, I thought he was in the last like kind of few games. He's just been so important to the team, and not just you know a couple goals here and there and stuff like that, but. You know, he got the goal. He got the header that led to the right. other goal from Thiago Martins. But he's just getting on, winning aerial duels, getting into challenges. But such a versatile game. And I think there's a little bit more being asked of him as an NYCFC player versus Orlando or Philadelphia, where he has to be a very good passer. He has to be poised and controlled in possession. And I thought he was... fantastic. I don't know who ended up being the player of the match in this game.
FAMAB has Choupo-Moting.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Which is kind of hilarious.
Two assists for him. But I think if you're going to beat the Rebels, especially at home, you have to, one, stop Emil Forsberg, which I know he had a goal, so you didn't really stop him. But he was a little bit more frustrated than usual. Mm-hmm. And you have to win the midfield battle. And Andres Pereira, on the way to doing that. Yeah. The midfield was incredible.
Also, Justin Hack too, bro. Fourth assist of the season. I think, I believe it's four. As a center back, quote-unquote center back.
Come
right?
on now.
He also moved into the midfield in this game.
What podcast said that he has the skills to break lines with passes? We want to see more of it. Us, baby. I mean, at the end of the day.
Wow, he listens and he heard.
Yeah, I think Pascal Johnson was like, I think these guys might be on to something.
So, it's great to see. And maybe this is premature. But, you know, I thought Justin Hack, you know, he was pretty vocal at the end of last season. He was like, you know, I want a new contract or I want to go to another team. Like, he was just like, hey, bro, like, if you guys don't want me here, I'm ready to move on. And I'm glad that they kept him, but then I'm starting to think like maybe not as a center back. I mean, as a center back, he's he plays, he wants to play a little higher up the pitch, and sometimes he gets burned, and some you know, strikers or wingers are very, very pacey.
It leaves an open gap for someone to be able to counter.
I mean, obviously, there have been a couple goals that he could have done better at in preventing, but I'm going to say, I don't know if anybody else has said this, but I'm like, he could maybe a call-up. Maybe a call-up, maybe not, you know, not in this year.
The kid deserves a January camp.
But just something to see, like, what he has to offer.
Take a look at this.
Just, you know, smoke your cigarette as you're watching, you're sitting on the sideline. Yeah. Just let me see what he has to offer.
Let me refill your mate gourd real quick and just take a look at my guy, you know. Just kick the tires a little bit.
Because I would love to see that. I think there's a possible role in the future with the national team, and I think he's shown a lot of leadership this season, and just been in good moments. And I remember talking to him. I had filmed a segment with him, little SponCon, a couple years ago, and I was asking him about, like, you know, who were the players that kind of you know, brought you, like, under their shoulder and stuff like that. And he was like, Maxime Cheneau. He's like, he was my kind of you know, guide for
great player,
and a good center back, great passer, long balls with both feet, really, really good. And I'm starting to see a little bit of Cheneau coming out in Justin Ack right now. So
we talk about getting into the playoffs. You need to build momentum. So let's look over the last 10 matches. Who do you think has the best points total over the last 10 matches in all of MLS?
In all of MLS, well, you want me to guess or pretend like we didn't have this conversation?
Do you remember at least?
Charlotte
Duke, yes, but second place, New York City. I didn't need you to pretend. I was going to say, Charlotte,
wasn't
yes.
Sure, we're doing the performative thing?
No. But Charlotte has 24 points over the last 10 matches. New York City with 22, so kind of sneaking up the rankings a little bit. Sure. I think a lot of people aren't paying attention. You know, we talked about intent. Winning a derby is a huge, huge point to get to right on the way into the playoffs. It's a nice sort of, not a chip on your shoulder. What's the word I'm looking for? It's a nice feather in your cap, if you will.
Sure. And Jurgen Klopp was at the game watching. I think before, I think.
Watching the wrong team, dog.
he was saying that derbies are he said, like, as a, from the manager's perspective, he's like, they're not fun. They're just a regular game. They're just 3 points, but they're more important to the supporters, right?
Speaking of.
Yes. So, yes. So NYCFC season sweep. They win the Hudson River Derby trophy as well, which was, the trophy was here last year as well, right before.
Thank you for bringing it, Third Rail.
Yeah, shout out to Third Rail for bringing it by. And it was before we interviewed Mita Ilanis. This was before the playoff derby. So this is a little bit of revenge, I think, for NYCFC to get this victory. But speaking of supporters, the big drama happened probably after the game with Raheem Edwards, the right back for left back for New York Red Bulls. And Raheem Edwards is a friend of the show. He's been on the show before when he was at LAFC. But there's a video going around, and I don't know who the original one was, who originally posted it. I saw it on Instagram from, I think, an account, Area Sports Network.
I saw the same
local coverage video of Rebels NYCFC and stuff like that. And they have a lot in a couple different markets. But the Raheem Edwards is seen, and we're watching it now, but Raheem Edwards is seen going over to the supporters and screaming and arguing with them. There's a lot of back and forth. What we saw that was reported, and it all is very alleged. I don't know if any of it is true because I have not seen the video is fairly long. You can go look it up, but I don't hear anything that points to this. But apparently there was racial abuse directed towards.
Well, Torcida, which is the supporters group that is involved in the back and forth with Raheem Edwards, released a statement.
And Torcida is a Red Bull supporter. I'm just going to be very clear. He's arguing with his own supporters. Not
Torcida 96 is the actual name of the supporters group, which I believe might have been the Empire supporters group back in the day, but I think they got banned. I think where that was born from, but I'm not 100% sure on that. If you are a Rebel fan, let us know. But their statement states, Torcida 96 unequivocally denies any racial slur was used in the altercation that took place between anyone in Section 133 and Raheem Edwards following Rebel New York RBNY's loss to New York City FC. So they have a full statement. That's the first line of that.
Yeah, I saw that.
You could read the rest of it. It's not very long. But they end it with racism and discrimination in any form. Dorceda 96 has a zero tolerance policy towards racism and discrimination in any form and believes matches should be a safe and welcoming place for everyone. So you're saying the right things. Raheem Edwards seems very upset about something. And in the video, I can't hear him, so I'm only taking what I can see. His mouth's there, but he's very clearly saying, "What's your name? What's his name?"
Yeah, you do
he's
see
speaking.
That.
He's speaking about somebody specifically, and he's trying to get their name.
He
believes that's the person who I guess verbally, racially abused him.
Yeah, I don't know what the abuse exactly was.
We're only piecing together the statement and what we're seeing.
Raheem Edwards was very upset. The only other word I can sentence I could hear him say is being directing at somebody. He's like, "You think this is my fault? You think it's my fault?"
I did hear that. Yeah, I heard that.
Those are the two things we heard.
And like, you think players don't care? I think I kind of heard someone say.
And it's, I'll say that. And the
fans are chanting, "You're not fit to wear the shirt."
Yeah. And this is Raheem Edwards' first season there. Also very odd that they're directing that at him. But
he was so angry that normally when a player goes up to fans and has a back and forth with fans, other players will come and, you know, they'll sort of stay behind the arms.
Show support.
He was shoving players off of him Carlos, like, "Get off me."
The goalkeeper, Carlos Coronel, he's trying to keep Raheem back. And Raheem
is like, "Get your hands off me."
Yeah, this is something where, obviously, we don't know exactly what happened with the supporters. But the optics of it do not look great amongst the Red Bull teammates. The security
came over. Security at one point got on that, like, whatever that moat area is behind the ad board, where Raheem Edwards was on the other side, the pitch side of the ad board, and the wall. So, like, the wall that starts the stands. So some fans jumped down off the stands to get kind of confront them, not like face to face, sure. So some security got there, which I think was a smart move. But even assistant coaches came out. And trainers came out. Dude, and Raheem was like, "All of you get your hands off me.
Yeah.
I need to resolve this," which was a little frustrating. Part of me was like, bring a woman out there, because I don't think he would shove a woman. And a woman did come out.
A
security guard. I couldn't tell if it was a security guard or a trainer, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe you know.
I thought was a cop in the stands. I don't know who you're referring to.
I saw a blonde woman, a trainer, or whoever it was, clearly saw. She was wearing a Rebel shirt.
Try to calm him down.
Who, like, you're not going to shove her, right? So hopefully that kind of calmed down. That seemed, the tape cuts, and then the next thing you see is Raheem Edwards walking away from the fans, clearly still upset, clearly furious, and having a conversation with someone that did not seem like a nice conversation.
Yeah, and this is the thing, you know, we interviewed Raheem a couple years ago. I mean,
sweetheart,
I couldn't find a nicer guy. I mean, so for something to piss off Raheem Edwards, it had to be pretty severe. Again, we do not know what it was, but this is a fairly... It's from fans of an MLS team, and obviously this is a derby and all this other stuff, and this is between their own supporters. Part of me is like, they're falling apart or whatever. Yeah. It was an important game, but then from a human perspective, it's like, you don't want to hear any kind of instances of possible racial abuse towards any player, sort of any player, but it's also insane if it's on your own team. Like, you don't even a different level of like disrespect for you. I mean, that's his home stadium, and if he's being attacked in that way, that it's just a different level of gross and just discomfort.
Right. But you have every right to boo and tell the player's not good enough.
Sure.
If it does get to that racial part, you've made a mistake, you should be banned.
But it's also the fact that he's like arguing with his own teammates and pushing people. It's just like, Raheem, like, you gonna
unless
work here next
was,
year?
Unless it was
know.
Racially abused, yeah, then maybe, I'm like, maybe. Yeah, so get your anger.
We're waiting to see like what the response is. Rebels did respond and said that they're aware of the incident and they're investigating and stuff like that. But yeah, it's again, I say that to say Raheem Edwards, it seemed like one of the most chill people we ever interviewed.
To make him that mad.
Something bad really had to happen. So I hope it wasn't what the allegations
being alleged,
are. Not a great look for Raheem, for the supporters, for the team, for everybody. It's just they go from MLS Cup final to this. You know, people screaming, sell the team, and all this other stuff, which is like, it's Red Bull. Like, it's like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, Jurgen Klopp's there, so.
Yeah, so.
You want someone to go straight to the CEO, that's that guy.
So it's interesting. So, all right, let's move on. Let's talk about just one more derby. The Madrid derby.
Seemingly a huge derby. And, Real Madrid come in amazing, right? They I don't think they've lost. They've not even drawn, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They've been crushing it in La Liga. And you've got Atleti, who had a tough game against Liverpool, really tough for Diego Simeone. And you feel like there was a little bit of a get back in this match.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to prove something to the world. He wanted to prove something that Madrid isn't just Real Madrid. Real Madrid, again, stacked with superstars. Atleti, no slouches either, but certainly the bigger names are wearing white shirts, not red and white. And, yo, Diego Simeone absolutely shook the world with this result. 5-2,
yeah.
Atletico Madrid wins.
And even at home, it's still pretty embarrassing.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's Real Madrid. I mean, they're not far from home. To win in this fashion, this isn't a one with a late header, you know what I mean, on a corner or a big like rough and tumble goal. This was a complete takedown by Atletico Madrid on Real Madrid.
Yeah.
It was kind of beautiful to watch. And I'm not anti-Real Madrid in any way, shape, or form, but this was a beautiful game to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think for some people, they like to see Real Madrid lose from time to time.
Yeah, Barcelona fans.
But the, I mean, I think the standout here, and maybe somebody who I think is going to just be on a different level this season is Julian Alvarez.
Yeah.
Who...
Julian, bro. We're Latino.
Julian Alvarez.
Hell yeah, dog.
Is... just it's so incredibly, like, just lethal. I mean, just scary. Even.
What did they pay? 80 million
something
for
like
him?
That, yeah.
And he still feels like a discount.
Yeah.
And this is the year he proves it. And we talked about this while watching it. We rewatched the highlights just before we got on. And he's like, Sorloff is so good. That's a good striker for most teams to have. You have him and Julian Alvarez? It's kind of crazy.
Well, it's interesting just seeing the spoils that, like, a team like Man City have to have Julian Alvarez, who barely is sometimes starting, on the bench or whatever. And it's like, you're keeping...
Had Haaland.
But you're keeping this on the bench?
Yeah. You hiding this from me, dog?
But it's interesting how I don't know.
It's like you go to your boy's house and he don't pull out the good wine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anytime I go to my boy's house, I'm like, yo, where's the good...
What kind of wine they pulling out at your boy's house?
As we play Super Smash Bros.
Right. Did I hear you twist the cap off that wine, my G?
Did I hear a cap come off a box?
A box? No, dog. Are you opening an old milk carton back there? Show me what wine you bring me.
You've ruined Mario Kart for me. So I think on one side, Julian Alvarez, I think, is becoming an absolute superstar and becoming just a much more important to that team. And, I mean, you saw the free kick that... Where Diego Simeone is just like, he's like, man, I got the best seat in the house.
Like, he's
just like in tears.
He's crying as if he didn't know he could do that. He's like, God, this guy is so good. Thank God we got, I'm the one who made that decision.
Oh, we have training on Monday?
Oh, man.
I get to see this again?
I'd love to manage that guy. I do?
Diego Simeone is very much a guy that still sees the art in the game. Like almost when you talk to him about
he's
it.
He's so Argentinian.
Like, it's just like, why is this so much romantic language?
Bro, you started this when you were like 8 and you're still in the game. You're the longest tenure manager in the world.
Yeah.
You still, it's like day one.
Yeah, Simeone's wife is like, I wish he would look at me that way.
Damn. She's like, I could be wearing lingerie when you walk in. And maybe I should be wearing a video, an iPad, showing Julian Alvarez's free kick.
For real. So he's fantastic. And then on the other side, and I don't know if it's not necessarily that much of a concern per se, but Dean Huijsen. 20 years old. Obviously, the kid is Real Madrid through and through. We've seen every, like, interview and everything he's done. He's like, Real Madrid is my club. There, people are like, why didn't you represent Netherlands? He's like, nope, I'm Spanish.
Yeah.
And I'm always, and so he is.
He's like, what are you speaking about?
He is tried and true Real Madrid. We know that. So obviously from probably since birth. But this is feeling like the
too much too soon.
The moment is very big. I mean, he left Bournemouth to go to Real Madrid and he's a great player. And I remember hearing David Raya talk about him. And he's like, he was playing with him when
like
he was 17, like 19.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't even dare to have the level of confidence that he has right now when I was that age. So I think very, very promising. But, you know, in this game, he got a 6.1 rating.
Right, he was cooked.
Not good for for any center back,
no.
But it's just something where is it too much too soon? Is he being put in very, very, like, you know, games like this are very, very high stakes. Is it too much for him? I mean, look, they won every game prior, so
my assessment isn't so much that, and this is similar to my arguments when it comes to Harry Maguire, right? I think if you are Xabi Alonso, you have a responsibility to this young player. And I'm not saying he's irresponsible. I'm saying you have a responsibility to protect this young player, mask him from some of the things that could possibly go wrong.
Yeah.
Don't put him in a position where it's too much. And I think by starting him, fine. He clearly has the skills to be a La Liga and a Real Madrid center back. Without a shadow of a doubt, he is one of the best center backs at his age. But when you're going up against a Diego Simeone, when you're going up against some of these other managers that you know are going to be like, we're going to attack whatever your weakest point is, similar to what Trent Alexander is like, your back line is stat. This is the only guy we can go against.
Right.
So we're going to beat him up, right? That's what you do against Dean Huijsen, because you're like, maybe he's so young, he can't. And that's exactly what you do time and time again. You have to start making adjustments to protect him a little more. And maybe that takes away from your overall plan, but you have to do it because this kid is 20. And that's why Mikel Arteta, when he had Saliba, and everyone's like, whatever, he's 18. Put him in. You're like, you don't put him in because these little things could shatter them a way that it wouldn't someone who's older,
who has
more experience. And you're at danger of doing this to a Dean Huijsen.
He, for this season in La Liga, he has decent, I mean, his FOTMOM ratings, 8.2, 8.0, 8.1.
He's very good, but when it goes bad, it looks bad.
But it's Osasuna, Real Oviedo, Mallorca.
El Alfa. Oh, you said Osasuna. I thought you said Osuna.
Real Sociedad gets a red card in the 32nd minute. Plays 90 against Marseille in Champions League. Plays well. Plays against Levante. Plays well. 90, 7.5. And then Atletico Madrid, 6.1. And his backline gives up 5 goals. He gets subbed out in the 89th minute. And it's just so there's clearly the majority of the games he's going to be fine.
This is Diego Simeone against Xabi Alonso. This isn't a Dean Huijsen
situation. Okay, so we'll see. I mean, he has to step up, obviously, in the big game. The expectations are very high in those big games. And similar to Premier League, where any little point dropped is
you heard it here first. Christian Polanco says, do not play your kids.
Only seniors allowed.
Old men only.
So, all right, let's wrap up there, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in to another episode of The Cooligans. We have a lot of exciting stuff coming up. Some big guests. Just a heads up, on October 10th, we are going to be doing a live show for after the USMNT match. So as we've been doing after some of the friendlies and stuff like that for the USA, tune in on YouTube and you can watch the game with us. So make sure
we'll be on YouTube live.
You do that. And all right. And as always, make sure you follow us on all socials at Soccer Cooligans. Hit us up on Blue Sky, soccercooligans.com. And what else? Anything else, Alexis? Oh, like the video, subscribe, do your homework. Everybody's back to school. Hope you got some cool outfits.
Love you guys.
Peace, everybody.